I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I will, not mine, be done. Okay, the topic of this workshop is, don't let a trip cause a slip, traveling abstinently. Ms. Marlene, I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm seated here with Elizabeth, who's also a compulsive overeater, and we're the co-leaders for this meeting. Each of us will have up to 20 minutes to speak, and then we'll open the room for shares up to 3 minutes. This session is being recorded. If you do come up to share, you don't have to sign anything, but you know that we are being recorded, and you can change your name or if you want to be anonymous. Right. Hello, friends. My name is Marlene, and I am a compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. I'm so very glad to be here today. I have to make it clear that I don't speak for OA. This is my story, so please take what you like and leave the rest. The topic today is don't let a trip cause a slip, traveling abstinently. And I have a lot of experience traveling and still living in recovery and abstinence, thank you God. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, on page 58, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. So, what it was like. I first came to OA in 1983. I heard something wonderful at that meeting. I have a disease, and it wasn't my fault that I can't stop overeating. It felt like a big weight came off my shoulders. Unfortunately, I treated OA like a diet. I lost a lot of weight and quickly went on the speaker's circuit. My ego was flying high. However, I did not work the steps, never got in touch with my feelings, and didn't have God in my daily life. I'm sure you can guess what happened. I left OA in 1990 and, of course, gained back all the weight I had lost, plus more. Because when it comes to food, I am not normal. A normal eater will stop eating when they are full. I don't know what full is. My full button is broken, if it ever truly worked. After all, what does hunger have to do with food, with eating? I lost my thought. Consequently, food ruled my life. How am I going to get it? How can I eat it without anyone seeing me, and will I have enough? Of course, I never had enough and felt sick all the time, physically and mentally. I carried with me feelings of inadequacy, helplessness, and low self-esteem was my constant companion, as was misery and depression. The guilt and shame was paralyzing. I was the middle child of a family that showed love through food. I don't remember hearing, "I love you," from my parents. I do remember hearing, "Eat this, it will make you better. Eat this, stop crying." However, I know my parents loved me, but I needed more, because that's what I have, disease of more. More is always better. I'm still working on that. I was a single mother raising two difficult sons all on my own. The food was my friend. It helped me through many a difficult situation. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. That promise has really come true for me. I don't know if I could have gone on without the mind-blowing numbness that eating provides me. Food was my friend until the day it was not. What happened? After 7 more years of research, I came back to OA. I'm here today because God sent an angel to me in the form of an OA member looking for another Marlene. And thank you, God, that phone call was all I needed to come back. I had hit bottom and was willing to do everything needed to bring me to sanity and recovery. And thank you, God, I have never left again. Through relapse and recovery, weight loss and weight gain, I know the only answer for my food addiction is the 12 steps and traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I encourage everyone to make phone calls. You never know whose life you are saving. My life hasn't been a smooth one since I came back, but here I am today doing the best I can. God and my program have to take priority in my life, or else I will have nothing. I live this with a tool. The first thing I did was get a sponsor and actually call her. That's important. It only works if you call her. This relationship is a godsend. Here you have someone that is willing to take your calls, to answer your questions, and guide you through the steps, to listen to you without judgment, just love. Funny story. When I was in Australia this year, I went on a Zoom meeting based in Australia. There was just a couple of people present, but we started the meeting. Shortly after, another person came in. And who was it? My first sponsor. What a coincidence. With a time difference, I never would have expected to see anyone I know. Next thing I did was work the steps in tradition. Step one, I admitted I was powerless over food, that my life was unmanageable. The principle behind step one is honesty. It's always been hard for me to admit what I eat. Guilt and shame, my constant companion. Two, believe that a higher power could restore me to sanity. The principle behind step two is hope, and I grabbed onto that with all my heart. Hope. Hold on, pain ends. Step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, a God who loves me unconditionally. He has my picture on his refrigerator. The principle behind step three is faith, and I choose today to live in faith. Action steps are 4 to 9, where I examine my past, look for my character defects, admit my faults to remove them, and make restitution. In other words, clean house. Promises me that as long as I continue this way of life, I'm neither fighting my addiction or avoiding temptation. The problem has been removed. It does not exist, and that is how I will react as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. And therein lies the rub. What exactly is fit spiritual condition? Brings me to step 11. Stop prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. And thank you, God, we are all able to define how we work the step. I can't forget for 1 second that all the blessings and miracles in my life are due to the acronym PAUSE. Practice always using step 11. What is there for me when I turn to God? Our literature says the only way to meditate wrong is to not do it at all. Help others. We are so blessed that the only way this program works is to share with others our recoveries. Our recovering our program will endure. It's brilliant, and it gives me the best friends in the world. People who understand me, think like me, and I don't have to feel abnormal or alone anymore. I hear so much experience, strength, and hope. And what's it like today? I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. My relationship with my family is the best it can possibly be for me, an addict. I have 2 loving sons, 2 wonderful daughter-in-laws, and 3 gorgeous grandchildren. Whenever we talk on the phone or see each other in person, we say, I love you. I'm a part of their life and feel truly blessed. Before recovery, my character defect of control almost ruined my relationship with my daughter-in-law. Thank you, God, I used the steps to find out my part and realize I'm not in control. My program is a part of my daily life. I only attend Zoom meetings, so retreats and conventions are a wonderful bonus. I go to about 5 or 6 meetings a week. It's so easy from my desk in my kitchen. Service is a huge part of my program. I don't feel stupid or useless anymore. You all allowed me to volunteer and help me do my job. See, I'm on one of the committees here. You gave me confidence and the ability to ask for help. Some of the service I have done and currently doing is, I serve as the chair of Central Ontario Intergroup, something I never would have believed I could do. I have been the region representative, the World Service Delegate, and the treasurer of my intergroup. I host many of my meetings. Going out of my comfort zone has given me many blessings. Friendships with people from outside and inside the Toronto area. Good friends that I can share anything with. I love the saying, the program changes me, the fellowship supports me, and I really feel supported. Sadly, I definitely have the travel bug. And since I sold my house in 2019, I've been away an average of 4 months a year. The pandemic did put a dent in my travels, but I did manage. Since I am a snowbird, because I don't like the cold and ice, Googled, where's the warmest place in Canada? The answer was Victoria on Vancouver Island. So off I went that winter of 2021 for 9 weeks. And the true blessing of that trip, because I used to put my phone number on my Zoom name, a fellow from Victoria copied it down when I said I was going there, and to my surprise, she called me and we met up. I'm getting emotional because Marley today is one of my closest friends and traveling buddy, a real gift from God. So here's some of the traveling I've done since November 2019. A cruise from Puerto Rico, 2 times to Puerto Vallarta, a trip to Maui and Hawaii, 2 Panama Canal cruises, 2 times to Florida, 3 times to Vancouver Island, 2 times to Canmore, Alberta, a Caribbean cruise, a Star Trek cruise, a Star Trek convention in Las Vegas, California, then a Hawaiian cruise, and a 3-week cruise from Italy to Dubai. This past year, I spent 2.5 months in Australia and New Zealand with Marley, including a 2-week cruise from Sydney to Auckland in the summer to visit my son and the new baby, and I just got home from a 3-week holiday to Europe. Switzerland, Germany, Austria, and Hungary. It sounds tiring, but I love it. And FYI, here are my traveling plans for next year. 2.5 months this winter in Puerto Vallarta, then in the spring off to England, including a 2-week cruise to Norway and Iceland, 2 weeks in Wales, 5 days in Ireland, and then 2.5 weeks in the Netherlands. Of course, I got to go visit baby again, so I'll be back to Alberta. So how do I travel so much and keep my abstinence? The main thing is that I know my disease does not take a holiday. So I have to live my program daily, no matter what and no matter where I am. I constantly for help. And before and during every trip, I thank God for a safe return journey. In fact, my disease is doing push-ups in the corner. I can never think that I am cured. And that is not a problem for me. I've done too much research in that area. I am a lifer here in program. I'm going to read you November 21st from the Voices of Recovery, because it really does sum up my way of life. What we needed now was a way of being abstinent over the long haul and living sanely through good times and bad. From the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of OA, page 21. When I arrived at the doors of OA, food was my master. In order to be released from its grip, I committed my food to a sponsor daily and abstained from specific foods, eating behaviors, situations, and people who were known triggers. I also attended numerous meetings. Although necessary, these actions put me at the opposite end of the food obsession. Abstinence is to bring about a sane and useful way of life. I must have a plan that I can live with forever. The plan must be flexible when the situation warrants, allowing me to commit my food or not, to go to places I had avoided, and to eat some foods I had relinquished. Once abstinence has been a habit, these things are all possible. If I find myself on unsteady ground, I must once again take the actions that worked in the beginning. Today, by God's grace, I have balance in my life and live in peaceful coexistence. Okay, so it says here, I must have a plan that I can live with forever. Yes, I'm not on a diet. By the grace of God, this will be my way of life till my end. The plan must be flexible, so truthfully an example. So back in 2016, I was in Australia and New Zealand for 6 months. I was flying from Australia to New Zealand, and unfortunately there was a mix-up with my visa. It took a while to get it straightened out, and I did not have much time to eat before my plane left. I also have Crohn's disease, so occasionally I'm limited in what I can eat. And at that time, I was having a small flare-up. No healthy salad, no greasy hamburger, what was left? I went into the gift shop and bought a small package of cookies, and that was my dinner. My stomach didn't give me any problems with that food, and I was not eating compulsively, just putting something in my body. The next day, when I landed in New Zealand, I went grocery shopping and bought all my healthy foods. I know that would not work for everyone. I believe we all have different bodies and nutritional needs. For me, I believe I am more addicted to the act of eating particular foods. Putting something in my mouth is like taking the tiger out of the cage for me. I do eat flour and sugar on occasion, not daily and not whenever I want. I follow my food plan, which includes intermittent fasting. Again, I know that doesn't work for everyone, but it does for me. I continue to keep off 70 pounds of excess weight. I don't weigh myself anymore because I believe my weight is none of my business. My only measurement is that my clothes continue to fit. I felt it really necessary to share on this topic. So that there are lots of ways to live abstinently, especially during travel. In this last holiday, the 3 weeks in Europe, we only ate a meal in a restaurant twice. The rest of the time, we grocery shopped and ate in our lodging. I only book accommodations that have a little kitchen with a fridge and microwave at least. Most days for lunch, I had a sandwich and fruit as I sightseed around. Some days, yogurt, fruit, hard-boiled eggs. Remember, failing to plan is planning to fail. Dinner, you can always pick up a barbecue chicken, salad, and other veggies. Or cans of tuna or salmon are usually ready available, or I bring them from home. I heard people say they don't want to cruise because there's too much food. I don't have a problem with that. I eat in the main dining room when possible, and portions are small there. If I have to eat in the buffet, I will check out the options before choosing and then stick with that. As long as God is beside me, I am okay. I can't live in fear. Traveling is too important to me, and I've been traveling on my own or with friends since I was 16. I went to Expo 67 in Montreal. When I was 18, I went to Europe for the summer with a Eurowell pass and the book Europe on $5 a day. Even when I worked, I was able to travel. The only time I had to limit traveling was when my kids were little and I couldn't afford it. But for 10 years, I worked 2 jobs and gave my children a good life, including travel. It's not just traveling abstinent that's possible. It's living life through good times and bad times. I've been a witness to recovery in spite of horrible diseases, answer to all my problems today. Because I put my program, my recovery, and my absent first, I continue to live a full life. I live with ABM, Abundance, Blessings, and Miracles. God has proven to me over the years that He has my back, so I don't need to worry. Love for the ride. So thank you all so much for listening to me, and I wish you all a peaceful and serene abstinence one day at a time. And now I'm going to turn it to Elizabeth, and she's going to
say. Hey, is this working?
Yeah. All right. Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I'm a compulsive overeater. From Ottawa, Canada. Little did I know when I had a problem with eating, a very strong city for OA, with a newcomers meeting too. So, yeah, I'm just telling my story, my experience, strength, and hope. Just how I see it. So, as always, take what you like and leave the rest. If people care about numbers, I've been in OA over 8 years. I've been imperfectly abstinent. I'll get to what that means. I'll just say dubious salad dressing. And I've maintained something like 100 pounds. I did not weigh myself at my heaviest, and I do not. My doctor knows I don't know if I'm worried. I ask her. And my clothes roughly fit right now. I'm slightly larger pant size, sometimes smaller, you know. But I can go back into my closet from things here. So a little bit on the background for me and my relationship with food. I come from a family with the disease, or the disease of not enough. So it manifests in many ways. Not good enough, don't have enough, not doing enough, and I need more. So it wasn't abnormal for food items to be opened and the entire container gone, because there were six of us and I get your share. So part of my disease is I got to get my share. I am a twin, and when we were born premature, she was full-sized. I was rushed to the angel. My sponsor helped me realize the idea of I got to get my fair share actually goes back before my birth. So, you know, I come by this disease honestly, but as it says in the 12 and 12, you know, maybe there's a love of food, maybe there's a predisposition, it doesn't matter. I am not normal with food. So it doesn't matter that I come from a foodie family. It doesn't matter that it's always empty in the container from the other end. We're trying to get a little bit more before your siblings are. You have to have a rule, actually. Whoever serves the plates can't choose which. So that gives you a good idea. So for me, I was one of those obnoxious person who has a cannot put on weight. So I ate like crazy, and I thought I'd get another decade before it start affecting me. But I was in a lot of denial about it. So at my heaviest, I actually forgot my photos. I didn't think to bring them. I also wore horizontal stripes, 100 pounds heavier than, and we're talking like coral bright pink ones. That's one of the photos we have. I'm like, this is what I was like. So I guess we'll go too much into the drunkologue of food, but let's just say it's crazy, the obsession, trying to figure out where I can go, what I can get for cheapest, how much I can have, and I knew it was bad when I stopped caring what other people saw at work and at school. I was at the package and don't even care. I was also in denial. So my story does not involve dieting pre-OA, because that would admitting I had a body and I was, you know, it's hard to be in denial when you have to buy new pants every month. But somehow I just didn't think of that in my own body. And that's a big part of my recovery, is being able to have a body, pay attention to it, care for it, notice when things happen. And it's not always easy, but it's really helpful for me. So how did I get into recovery? Because of the disease is more, when I was a teenager, I joined a family and friends of people. And there, I got a lot of emotional recovery. I learned to be vulnerable. I learned to speak. And I did the waltz. Not willing to get honest about myself, because it was their problem. I'm not the one with the problem. I'm the victim here. You know, step eight, I deserve amends. For those who are listening to the recording, I just did the gesture. I don't know. So I've been in 12-step recovery for about half of my life by now. All right. So in OA, like I said, I joined, and there happens to be strong recovery. I joined. There's a newcomers meeting right around the corner from my house, so I didn't even need to bum rides, unless it was like really icy. And there I learned some things around, you know, meals a day, nothing in between. I learned things, you know, don't eat off the counter, off the chopping block. Like meals have a beginning and an end. I got a sponsor. I got one of those photocopied food sheets. Like, I'm not a doctor. Here's what I did. It worked for me. And I tried that. And I lost the weight. And I felt like crap. Like, I literally thought I was going to have mini stroke. I went to a dietitian to get some medical advice. And she looked at it, what I was eating, and said, this is less than half what your body needs to survive. So I accidentally starved myself. So that's why I'm very clear about, you know, what's one person's abstinence, what's good for one body. So yeah, that's how I got to this 100-pound weight loss and work with my doctor on maintaining. So I guess I'll switch a little bit, just saying, yeah, through my recovery, working with a sponsor, you know, started off with doing questions, getting used to the process of writing step work. I believe there's going to be some workshops. I'll learn more about doing processes for an inventory or stuff like that. So yeah, writing everything down. Thankfully, I didn't have that much time to build up a lot of stuff I have to make amends for. You know, I can get a lot of pain and suffering in the goody two shoes and a people pleaser. There's not as many apologies to do there. Most of it's to myself. So recognizing the character default setting, character, I don't like saying the defective, because I'm not a defective person, and me being hard on myself is a key part of my disease. I'm not good enough, I'm not doing things. And so from that, that's kind of like an encapsulation of my recovery up to now. So I'll talk a little bit about traveling. One of the passages I really like in the Big Book is around, it starts with the On Awakening, and it's around step 11. Thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. Not easy for me. We don't go. Not easy for me. We're often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. The hunch or the occasional inspiration grabs part of the mind. So that's for me, for my food. I'll just first of all say what I do all the time, traveling or not, and then what traveling adds to that. I write down my food every single day, what I eat, what time I eat it. After meeting with a dietitian, I also, actually from the beginning, weigh and measure. Now I can guesstimate, have a better idea, or if somebody else is preparing, I don't need to get out the measuring tool. But after meeting with a dietitian, I use a calorie estimator, because my history isn't the paycheck, but I know for somebody else that is their disease, so I know not for everyone. But for me, the numbers is to make sure my body is getting what I think I deserve a little bit more, or I can sneak a little bit more in the meal. The numbers can tell me, no, you don't need that glass of milk with dinner. Or you actually do need to have a little bit of your lunch, because it's a big bowl, but it's not everything your body needs. So I send that to somebody daily, or if I don't, I send it fairly quickly as well. So that's my daily food commitment. I say it at the end of the day, but sometimes when things are busy, I know what's happening, I'll send it the night before saying, here's my outline for tomorrow. So when I was doing shift work or when traveling, here's an idea so I won't be lost. As it was said, fail to plan to fail. But I can't control, you know, indecision. What do we do? Where do I go to a restaurant? And I have to make a decision. I have to try and trust that my judgment, that I know enough about what my body needs. Then it also says, you know, being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact, it's not probable we're going to be inspired at all times. We may pay for these presumptions and all ideas. So sometimes I make decisions about food, which maybe could have been better in other situations, or maybe it's the best available from there. So that's when I forget to ask for salad dressing on the side, or I dip something in and be like, oh my God, why did they put, for me, I don't do sweeteners or sugars. Why did they put that in this food? That's not what I expected. And then, or sometimes I'm a little bit more self-willed. It's like, well, technically I can have this. And sometimes I try that and I, you know, have a little sip, and I'm like, oh, so when I asked for the sugar-free, sweetener-free, no sweet, no sugar London Fog, he didn't realize that vanilla syrup counts as sweet. So I have to sit around and be like, do I finish West Cup in my hand? And I can make the decision. Sometimes it's dubious. I don't know. Let me try sipping. Maybe I'll get through half the cup and be like, no, this is too much. Sometimes right away, no. Sometimes right away, I decide I cannot have one more sip of this, and it's another lie to actually put the cup out of my hand without sipping it, even though I know it's not abstinent, continue eating it. As the reading continues, nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. I have to try and trust my judgment, and with all of that, honesty is key. That one principle, honesty. If there's something dubious, and it's on my notepad, I say caution symbol, dubious, so the person who's receiving my food knows this is not normal, or this is a red flag. Oftentimes afterwards, I talk it through somebody else. Was there another possible option? Could I make a different decision next time? What are some other things I do? Oh, yeah, that situation sometimes in restaurants, I eat something and I cannot finish what is on the plate. Occasionally, I try to get a, you know, little takeout container and try to give it to a panhandler. And, you know, sometimes they refuse food, too. Isn't that funny? People refusing free food? Wild world, you know, people get to decide what they want. And it's not just, hey, it's available. I also, when I'm traveling, I plan what I can. So for here, I looked at what restaurants were available in the area. I looked at the menus. Can you eliminate? I look up, can I get groceries where I can go? You know, I have regular staples that I bring while traveling. I mentioned in traveling, I use a nutritional shake, what it needs. So sometimes that's what I rely on a lot while traveling. Once I did a weekend camping trip, basically only doing the shake, and some other people were a little worried for me, and I'm like, no, it's okay, I just don't want to figure out camping. And it's funny, actually, it's usually only, like, the kids who actually are mean about it. Not mean about it, but, like, you know, adults kind of now aren't, to me, being me around my food or making lots of, there'll be comments here and there, but it's only the 9-year-olds who are like, why are you doing that? You should have this. And in some of the cases, it's because they want to share, and they're going around to share, and why aren't you taking the sharing? And be like, thank you. No, thank you. So, yeah, and there's other shelf-stable foods, instant oatmeal, canned things that I know work for traveling. So I have some of those up in my room in case I can't get to a restaurant for lunch tomorrow so that I'm not stuck. Another thing about being not stuck is timing. Food has a window when it's good for eating, but sometimes it doesn't work. Yesterday I'm driving, was a little bit late at lunchtime, but I only just got through the border crossing. I wanted to go to another town for lunch. You know what? I can have a morning snack, which I now allow in my food plan, and I'll have lunch a few hours later than normal or a few hours earlier. You know, I did shift work. I know that sometimes meals have to be up. And of course, that's why I write out the timing. That's important when you're doing travel with time zones. So if I'm doing a time zone shift, I put in, this is the time I had my breakfast in. This is the time zone I had lunch in. This is the time zone it would be in where I'm arriving. Sometimes imperfect. I had a big resentment because there's a certain airline that serves lunch 1 hour after departing the flight, regardless of what time the flight leaves. So I'm like, well, I just had lunch an hour and a half ago. Let's see if I, oh, you don't have refrigeration on here. Okay, that's trying to balance it in. And then another thing, another good tip is to recognize what cuisine. I know if I go to a Middle Eastern restaurant or a Greek restaurant, there's probably something. If I go to a pub, maybe there's a sad salad I can eat if I'm lucky. I know if I go to a Chinese restaurant, maybe I'll have it, but maybe there'll be a dubious sauce in there. So it really depends. So finally, what kind of things can I do traveling now? Abstinently, I was able to finish up my studies with a 4-month exchange trip in Scotland. Different food available. No OA meetings without, you know, an hour-long train ride, which is pretty cheap in Europe. It's nice. That's an outside issue. So I go to AA meetings. Sometimes when traveling, I identify myself as, I'm Elizabeth, I have a problem with drink. Sometimes drinking food. They don't need to know it's hot chocolate, that's my big problem. They just know I'm there for 12-step recovery. When I was in Scotland, there was long-standing, you know, before the video online meetings, text-based meetings. I relied on that a lot for text help. What else have I been able to do? I've been able to decision to go across the country this past summer and do a job in the Rocky Mountains, drive there by myself, buy a car, figure it out, leave my husband back home in Ottawa. Not leave him, he's still here, we're still together, in different cities, and live in a place where it's a half-hour drive from the town and the nearest grocery store. There's only two grocery stores, unless you want to drive another hour. And then one of the grocery stores gets a hacking in their supply chain logistics, and so now there's one grocery. Or, you know, there's maybe one shelf full of a lot of stuff and then no shelves of other. What foods do I know are safe for me? And it is, you know, living in this place in the mountain, and, you know, from one day the power went out. So I just been through the town visiting family a couple hours away. I just got a whole $80 full of groceries. Got my cousin to pick up stuff I could not buy in the small town. Power went out. Okay, can't open the fridge, whatever. Oh, power went out because there was a windstorm and lightning, which started a forest fire. And so having to pack up, thankfully, so it's absolutely a devastating fire I had to get from, but I only lived there 2 months, so it's not, but it was a devastating fire. It locked 2 out of 3 of the highways out of town, destroyed a third of town, and I was, you know, way out of town, so burned to the ground. So I was able to leave that, and my food was all in the fridge because the power was out, right? But I was able to pick, you know, my shake mix, my instant oatmeal, a couple of stable things, get in my car, get out to another little town, out past the evacuation center. And as I'm driving through with the ashes falling in the night and ashes coming down the sky, you know, big mask on inside the car, I'm doing the game, you know, what's the worst that could happen? You know, I go through the list, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I got a full tank of gas. What's the worst that can happen? Traffic accident. Wolves. Worst that could happen. Werewolves. Somewhere down the list. You know, I need to keep my spirits up. It's, you know, a little slow going out of here with 15,000 other people. And, you know, after werewolves on the list is like, oof, I'm going to have to find abstinent food. Which apparently a lot of places do bowls now, so it's a little easier and such. And I was able to go there and actually eat at the evacuation center, and there was food I could have. And, you know, sometimes people like to believe I'm gluten-free. Sure. What if that's, people want to believe it, so I can get stuff I can eat. It's a problem now, though, because there's so many, well, there's gluten-free this and gluten-free that, and I'm like, well, I don't eat any baked goods, you know? Or sometimes people believe, oh, are you lactose intolerant? I'm like, sure, yes, that's why I'm not having the ice cream. Of course, yeah. But whatever works, honestly with myself, taking care of myself, being honest with others around the food, and just making it one day at a time, that's all we can do.
Thank you.
So we are now opening up the room for shares for 3 people can come up to the front here. Do remember that it is being recorded, so if you want to use a fictitious name, that is okay. So come on up.
I mean, can't believe I'm up here. You know, there was a time I was so scared to speak in front of anyone, I never would have done this. My name is Robin. I am a low-bottom compulsive overeater and an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I am maintaining... when I say low bottom, I mean it. I'm maintaining 150 pounds. For me, I know I only have 3 minutes, but I found my recovery in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Really, I rely on that and the phenomenon, the whole thing about the phenomenon of craving. And I haven't been abstinent for the whole 45 years I've been here. But I learned through the Big Book that because of the phenomenon of craving and the fact that my disease continues to progress, whether or not I'm abstinent, that I needed, and this happened a few years ago, I had to give up both sugar, which I had already given up, but I also had to give up flour. And that made all the difference in abstinence since that time. OA has brought me a life beyond my wildest dreams. It's allowed me to travel all over on cruises, and it actually allowed me to travel here to this place yesterday from Rhode Island. And just before I came into this room, I walked with my OA fellows over next door, market basket, because I don't have the meal plan here, and I got my veggies, and I got my protein, and I got my fruit, and I will have those things when I'm done here for the main event tonight. But away, there's no guarantee. I might have gone and gotten a gallon of ice cream. I don't have to do that today. I can be a person living among people, and life is incredible. So I wanted to share that with you, and with that, I'll pass.
Wow. Thank
you.
Farlene was here, so I actually walked right in the door. The greeter said, from Toronto, she said, oh, do you know Marlene here? I'm like, no, I didn't know she was here. So I travel a lot. Marlene and I have that in common. And I'd say a couple of points. One is when I'm going on a flight that's 14, 16 hours, and the day is longer than a normal day, I have an extra meal because that makes sense. And if I am going the other way, I skip a meal because, and that is something that was so screwing with my mind at first. I thought, how am I going to do that? But that just makes sense because my body needs it. The other thing I'd say around it is praying. Just pray. Like, God, help me to find the food I need, the meetings I need. I was in Morocco recently, and I was in the middle of Marrakech in the market, and I was just like, I really need a meeting. I just like saw a little opening with a coffee shop. I walked in, they had Wi-Fi, I hooked into a meeting, and I was in a meeting in Toronto, you know, online. I mean, like I could see everybody from my phone, and I was right there. I used that when I was in London, up, and I just plugged in. So I went to meetings the whole time. I was away for 5 weeks, and I just went to my regular meetings, like anything that was online. I went on traveling. Thanks.
Thanks, Janet. Your ideas. Come on. Yes, I can chime in.
Hi, everybody. Is that a compulsive reader? So, since me, I was abstinent for 15 years. I relapsed, got back on for about a year, was off for probably about 5 years, and then I had an episode with pancreatitis. Twice. Ended up in the hospital. Got out, I said I have to do something different. Since that time, I've been really trying to do things that are different. One of them is to really plan. I'm going on a trip. My husband is from Mexico, so we do trips every so often. It could be once a year, it could be twice a year. I always get a little nervous, but I'm always reminded that my higher power is always going to be with me, which is number one. I take pictures of my literature, like the pages I'm going to read. I just put it on my phone, but it's nice and easy for me because I just have it on my phone, and I'm able to look at that. If I really need to call somebody, I do have people on them. I know that I can go online on Zoom. I even take and I make things, like, before I get on the plane. I didn't know I could actually make, like, an omelet. I make a couple of omelets, and I take them with me, and I can eat them on the plane. I even take my toast with me or whatever, you know. And it's an abstinent meal for me. I take soy nuts with me. I take tuna packets, which are my protein. And I just tell myself, you know what, it's just for a couple weeks. You know, I can't really eat at restaurants. I have to be very careful with the grease. Amazing thing is I do still have my gallbladder. A lot of people don't, but I have mine. And I fight for it to keep it. I do not want to lose it. So going through that whole thing with pancreatitis is a horrible thing. Anyway, there's a lot of things that, you know, you can do in the head. And, you know, really keep in touch with the program somehow. Really, 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 you know, somebody else had mentioned a lot of praying, keeping up with my literature, making sure that I'm not going to say something. I'm not really checking out the foods and making sure that what I'm eating is going to be okay. And if somebody doesn't know the ingredients, guess what? I'm not going to eat it. Then I'll eat something else. I've got to have some type of oil. It's just taking care of myself, you know, so that's all we can all do. I wish everybody an abstinent weekend.
Thank you.
I'm Anne B. I'm from New York, but currently live in Florida because it's too cold.
Hi,
I love to travel. I've been 18 and a half years. I'm a 100-pounder. I'm a relapse survivor. And abstinent one day for you, even if I've never met you before. This is the first time. But you know what? I take you guys with me when I travel. I'm hoping to hear more. I've been writing down notes of what people do because I still find travel hard. Because my disease says
Well, you know the day is longer because you travel today.
I get up at 4:20 this morning so that I could be on a plane at 7 o'clock. Like, I'm not eating at that out of the morning. I never was up.
But, gotta make
your plan better. But I found something I could have a quick lunch when I got here. That was Google. My food plan is very loose. There are certain things I never eat. You know, when I tell a normal person I haven't had such and such or that in 17 years, they look at you like you're crazy. But even in my relapse, I never had that stuff. I'm still a 100-pounder. But I gained a lot of weight. And what caused it? Obesity. And I want to keep traveling. So it's easy for me to get places. So I hope more of you come up here and give me more good ideas so I can, because it's my toolbox. I'm somebody said, like, oh, dang, why didn't I think of that? And they're so silly. But when you travel, if you can get to a local meeting, it is so much fun. It's fun to go to a local meeting and get the hugs from, you know, well, thanks for letting me share.
And
hi everyone, my name is Julie, I'm from Quebec City.
Hi Julie.
I'm so touched to being here. Thanks for inspiring share with you how OA changed. I was in recovery. I was struggling to eat. The focus was reading the guide. All the pages that interested me were restaurants and those things. And OA changed my perspective. And this one promises about things and not being inside yourself and anymore. Now I love to go to museums. That was not the case before. I love to take a tour and learn about the history of place I'm visiting. So there's a lot of tricks with food that I grocery store. In fact, going to grocery store is very fun. You're discovering new in your healthy ingredients and healthy food mix of flavors, but for a very good trip. But I found my days, like my focus is not on food anymore, and that's a real gift at the share.
Thank you.
I'm a compulsive eater. My name is Bruce. I'm also from Ottawa. Yeah, so how to stay abstinent on a trip, because like my travel a lot for my, you know, my day job, but I also do a lot of OA stuff. So the whole process of it, what I've learned is I have to have my days resemble what I do here as much as possible. My routine, like, you know, I get up, water, meditation, and I do some yoga, meditation part as well. Part of my job, bread, chocolates, and two of those things are on my binge list, and the other one's on my yellow list. But sure enough, in Geneva, they have grocery stores. Instead of asking, like, you know, what is in this letter, German name, you know, just to make sure that whatever's in there is okay. But I also, when I'm there, you know, I get up, I use the water, my prayers, and I do my meditation. Then at night, I have the same thing in reverse order. So for me, it's always a key of whatever's going to keep me abstinent here in my house is going to keep me abstinent over there in a hotel.
Good evening. My name's John. I'm from New York, and a lot of Canadians here tonight. I travel up into Ontario from time to time. It's really kind of I travel mostly for work. So I work as a salesman, and I travel throughout different areas of this region. And what I try to do is, in the mornings, I set up a food plan, and I use some tracker on my cell phone, which makes it kind of nice. I kind of key in all the foods that I eat that day, and then I turn around, and it does the counting for me, so that well. Try to focus pretty heavily on proteins and vegetables. It's very difficult. A lot of people mention, you know, eating in restaurants, and that's a challenge. But something if you really the food list is. But I keep some cashews or different products that are heavier in protein in my vehicle, so that I kind of resort to for myself there. But the spirituality portion of it and the prayer portion is pretty strong. Something I lean on.
My nickname is Bruce,
Hi, Sue. I'm
trying to embrace that. I don't have great travel tips for you. What I'm hoping is that as you see me over the weekend, if traveling to family, I am going to be doing that in January for 3 weeks to siblings. And they all know that I'm in OA, but I haven't talked about what my food needs are. Then, thank you for the person who talked about keeping the morning things. Sue's, and I'm looking.
We have time for one more.
I'll try.
Ready?
Yes.
My name is Anne. I'm from the Boston area, Somerville.
Hi.
I came here to meet my friend of 4 years I only knew on Zoom. I met her for the bill anyway. My name is Anne. I'm a compulsive emotional overeater in recovery yesterday. I say it that way because that's today for me. In traveling, I think the best thing is to, like someone said, bring breakfast. If I start my day right, I bring my oatmeal and my protein and my fruit, yeah. And, I've been a compulsive eater all my life, since 2 or 3 years old. And, my love of my life was a heroin addict. And when he admitted being an addict, I said, I am too. He said, you don't do drugs. And I said, no food. And I was 24. I knew it. And, I came in. I lost all my weight at 30 and went back out again because I wanted to go back into the food. 4 years ago, I needed spirituality because of COVID, and I came back, and I haven't left, and I will never leave again. And I just wanted to come at my highest power. I didn't want a sponsor. And then I white-knuckled, and I'm like, I need a sponsor. I got the best sponsor in the world. And then... But I kept breaking out after 6 months and going back into program and like that. So I didn't realize I never worked the third step before. I did not turn to my higher power. And I did work third step back in March. So I've been totally sober. I call it sober, not abstinent, for 7 months now. And that's over six. I'm hoping to just keep going, and that's why I'm here, just to get some strength.
Everyone for coming to this session on traveling abstinently. I look forward to speaking with you the rest of the weekend. I'm sure we all have good stories to tell. So we opened up with the Serenity Prayer in English, and as our region includes a lot of Quebec in Canada that also speaks French outside of Quebec. And I will close with a Serenity Prayer.
Par la sérénité, des choses que je peux, j'ai de changer des choses que je déterrais.
Back, it works with your work ethic. Thank you, everybody. I'm going to shut these off now.
Great job. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you.